So this the area, I wondered about that. I mean, do we have any idea? I mean, you know, I'm out here in the country and you're out in Mexico.
Yeah. Oh,
I mean, do we have any idea of what's floating around?
Yeah, we do. It's people like Dr. Huber at Purdue University and people like Stephanie Seneff at MIT. These guys are the researchers to follow what's going on. And getting involved with somebody like the Acres organization or even the Weston A. Price Foundation, these are people that are very committed to quality and also good testing and understanding of these toxins that we're being exposed to in our soil and in our air and in our water and in our food supply.
On the whole, what kind of a air filter thing did you end up getting?
I have an Austin air filter. I know that IQ is quite good, and I believe the one called Molecule is quite good. And those, the Austin and the IQ, are what are most talked about or represented at all the environmental cancer and environmental medicine symposiums that I attend. And so this one, it's a beast. I only have to change the filter every couple years. And it's really notable. If I have it going and not going, I can tell a difference. We live a few blocks from a gas station. Uh-huh. And my levels on a test from a test last year showed my benzene levels to be quite high. And again, I mentioned earlier at the show that I have SNPs that don't process those things very easily. So even the smallest amount in my chemistry is very dangerous. Yet my husband could probably eat it for breakfast and it would be no problem, right? So we have our own ways of moving this through the building. And so that air filter really helped me lower my exposures to what was coming through, just wafting into the winter windows in the summertime.
Uh-huh. Let's see. Could Dr. Winters address male-specific cancer issues? Here's an email. In other words, cancer unique to men, most notably prostate.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that we think of women's cancers of the ovary or the uterus and cervix and breast and men's being prostate. They're different animals altogether. And the only difference is, of course, just our gender and our gonads, our actual organs. But the similarities are there in that we are sitting in an endocrine disrupting stew between the plastics and a lot of the things we load up our animal proteins with. You know, we pump up our animals with antibiotics and hormones and things like that that also impact us. Our water, of course, is loaded with a lot of these endocrine disrupting chemicals. Glyphosate itself is an endocrine disruptor. And so it's a hormone imbalance, and yet we sort of treat it like it's a separate entity that men should be treated differently than women. What I find across the board is I test the hormone balance and the way the body detoxifies the hormones in all those patient population, whether they're women with breast cancer or men with prostate cancer, and we seem to find very similar patterns, estrogen dominant in these men. And we are seeing a lot of issues of toxicity as well. We're also seeing a lot of blood sugar imbalance. We used to think that it wasn't a cancer of glucose absorption, but blood sugar imbalance will throw off hormones even more, and stress hormones in particular. And then with men, there's a lot of issues around even just the stress. You know, a lot of men, I think, carry their stress in their lower back, their lower pelvis. You know, that's where they carry their duty, their responsibility, their security, their need to take care of the people, the loved ones around them. And I think that it kind of, you know, silts down there. It sounds a little esoteric, but it seems to be kind of a common pattern in my men that I work with. They tend to carry a lot in that part of their body. So I do kind of, again, thorough assessment of that. And we want to balance out their blood sugar. We want to balance out their hormone status. And luckily, I've been very fortunate that most of the men I've had the ability to work with at the beginning of a diagnosis of prostate cancer have not had to go very, you know, aggressive, especially if they were men over the age of 60 with prostate cancer. Those tend to be way less aggressive than in men under the age of 60. Men under the age of 60 have a lot of other cofactors, typically from the environment or even from mothers who might have taken birth control pill or DES. We look at a history of some hormonal mishap early on, even in gestation, that increases their risk of cancer at a later date. So again, I wish I could give you yet quick, simple answers, but again, at the beginning of the book, there's a way that you could go through the person who asked that question and get a sense of what goes into your bucket and what the priority is, and maybe start to dive into addressing those imbalances first.
The book you're talking about is the one that's out, The Metabolic Approach to Cancer, and you're working on your second, right?
Yeah. The second one is more of a therapeutic, specific therapeutic diet, like how to eat exactly with certain types of chemo or with radiation or certain cancer types and when, and even how to do very focused keto or very focused intermittent fasting specific to these conditions and treatments as well. And then it's going to, of course, be a lot more rich and loaded down with recipes, because people are, you know, we're kind of foodies out there in the world, and folks really love to know what to eat and how to eat and how to organize it, their weekly grocery menu.
We're talking with Dr. Nasha Winters, a naturopathic doc, and her website is drnasha.com. Her book, The Metabolic Approach to Cancer, then she's coming up with a new one soon, and that one is called, what one?
Well, we don't have a working title yet, it's like, so we've got it done, the content, now we're putting it all together, and the publisher's just kind of waiting on us.
Yeah. So. Well, I would put, I would put Kim Kardashian in the title. That would probably work.
That might sell a couple books.
Yeah, I think I'd do that one.
So we
have people that come on all the time and say, well, you know, if you have cancer, then you just do this and then it'll go away. And, you know, ketogenic and just juicing and all of that. I mean,
I wish it were that easy.
Yeah, I wish it were that easy. But, I mean, are there specific type of cancers or the way it's been formed that's going to respond better to, I don't know, like all meat or all vegetables? What do we know about that, really?
Well, we know enough to know that kind of the common thread of an anti-cancer diet is still plant-based no matter what. So when I work with ketogenic diet with patients with cancer, it is not an Atkins diet at all. An Atkins diet is very high protein, very low carbohydrate, very little, if any, vegetables. That is not a healthy diet for anybody, in my opinion, outside of maybe rapid weight loss to maybe help with the diabetes process, but it's kind of like get in, get out. But with my population, I need those cofactors. I need those phenols. I need all those beautiful minerals and micronutrients that are loaded in the vegetables. I need the fiber. I need the color of the rainbow, which is going to really be turning on and off all kinds of epigenetic switches as well. And so my folks are still shooting for anywhere from 9 to 15 cups of vegetables a day.
Wow.
Above ground, low glycemic, that is still the base camp. Then next on that is quality fat. So olives, olive oil, depending on the person, the constitution, the situation, their blood chemistry, their epigenetics, it might be butter, ghee, or it might be coconut oil, or it might be some, good quality duck fat, or, you know, depends on the situation. And then meat or protein, animal protein, be it an egg or poultry or fish or buffalo or beef, that is more like a condiment in this population, because we need the protein to build rebuild our tissues. But we don't need that much in a cancer patient. 0.8 to 1 gram per kilogram is really the maximum somebody going through a cancerous process needs, just enough to meet their protein needs. And then the key that is really the anti-cancer, piece de resistance for all diets that are effective for cancers of all types is low carbohydrate. Okay, so sugar is sugar is sugar, whether it came from a grape, whether it came from a potato, whether it came from, a Twinkie. It turns into the same thing in the body. And so because we've all become such sugar junkies in the last 150 years, we were eating about 30% of our calories as sugar before we started processing sugar and flour in the 1850s. But today we're eating about, 70 to 80% of our diet is carbohydrate. And we are all just kind of stuck in this sugar burning, oxidizing process. So really all cancers will respond favorably to a much lower carbohydrate diet. It might seem like a popular, cool thing to do, but biochemically and evolutionarily speaking, we ate much less carbohydrate up until very, very recently. And so those are the common denominators that I'm usually working on. And the individuality of the tumor type, of the person, of their labs, of their SNPs, that's how we tweak it to get them very, very specific for what works for them. And that's why we have good success. We're not dogmatic. We're looking, we're testing, assessing, addressing, and adjusting accordingly.
On the complex carbs, are there any that are more favorable, easier to digest, or just a better choice? Because it's so much fun to have these carbs because they're fun.
Absolutely. So, you know, in that place of fun, I mean, I'm always telling my patients, I don't really want them counting their carbs from their vegetables, right? Pretty much have as much as you want above the ground vegetable matter out there. Then you can start to enjoy the more, you know, like the sweet potatoes, the tubers such as, but like more in like the taro family or plantains can be a fun one to bring in because you get a lot of different starches that are good for the microbiome. But again, I let their body type and their blood sugar, their insulin, their hemoglobin A1C, and their insulin growth factor numbers determine how much fun they can have in that arena. So these diets aren't forever because once you become more metabolically flexible, you can increase your carbohydrate intake to a point, right? None of us should be going back to eating the way we did. None of us. If you've had cancer, the idea of you ever going back to the life before that is actually what got you cancer to begin with. So I really want folks to hear that. You cannot heal from the soil in which you got sick. So I really help my folks understand that this is your new way of being. This is how you treat it, clean it up, and prevent it from ever coming back, and try to inspire the people around you to follow suit. That's our goal. But eventually, where people might be only getting 20 to 50 grams of carbohydrate a day in the beginning, they might get more loose to like 50 to 75 grams, which will feel really luxurious after a period of time. And you lose your taste for all that sugar and carbohydrate. And you start to feel satiated from a half an avocado versus, you know, a half a cupcake. It's a shift in your chemistry, and especially a shift in your brain chemistry, because sugar, carbohydrate, starch, they all upregulate dopamine, which is the centers of the brain that cocaine works on, that same center. So we are all a bunch of sugar addicts. And so you can retrain that and thrive and have joy in your food without all the sugar.
Dennis has a question for our guest. There's a lot have been said about the acid alkaline of the urine or saliva when it comes to the growth of cancer. What is your guest opinion on this? Good question, Dennis.
Well, it's not an opinion. It's actually quite rooted in science, in that, yes, we will see varying pHs in various tissues of our body at various times of the day, time, you know, season, year. That's very normal. To completely change your alkalinity or your acidity takes often a pharmaceutical dose. So the concept is a little bit of a myth. We actually go into kind of myth busting around the acid alkaline discussion in the book, the whole section, because it's that important. But basically, scientists, researchers will say that's kind of a myth. You can't really change that without pharmaceutical endeavors. And here's the other side of the story we try and explain, is that acidity didn't come first. The cancer environment, the microenvironment around a tumor cell that wakes up, that gets activated because of things we're putting in, on, or around our body, will change the microenvironment around it to make it acidic, to draw in all of these other you know, things to help it grow. So it's like the chicken or the egg, right? And what we're now understanding, and people like Mina Bissell, she's a world-renowned researcher, and others like her out there in the cancer world, will tell you that the microenvironment change is secondary to cancer itself. And so treating with an alkaline diet isn't going to change that. It's you've got to come after it from more of a metabolic place. And that metabolic place is typically around lowering carbohydrate load. So he's on to something in that we can kind of manipulate it subtly, but the whole section of the book goes into much more detail with references to why it's a bit of a myth.
Boy, these carbohydrates, they need a PR person. I tell you what, they're getting battered from all sides, aren't they? I mean, rice and whatever.
Yeah. And we now know that Alzheimer's is type 3 diabetes. We know that autism also responds to low carbohydrate diet. We know that Alzheimer's responds to low carbohydrate diet. We know that diabetes, cardiovascular disease, obesity, all the things that plague us today, it's not an accident that the one common denominator in our world since the 1850s was going from 5 pounds of sugar per person per year to 175 pounds of sugar per person per year. That's a very short window, basically more than a few pounds a year accumulating every year. That's insane. So it's not a wonder that it's toppling us now. You know, what sugar does, if you put sugar in your gas can, you know, or your gas tank, you might be able to sputter down the road for a little bit, but it's going to rust out. It's going to destroy your engine. That's what it's doing to all of us. It's destroying our engines.
Oh, well, I want a destroyed engine. Could you ask Dr. Winters what she knows about stem cell healing methods for cancer patients and whether or not there's any conflicts in the methods is used in the combination with others?
Wow, such a brilliant question. Now, first of all, I'm intrigued. I'm watching kind of from the sidelines with this patient, with this person who's asking this question, because we don't have enough research of its safety and validity yet specific to cancer. We're starting to look down that rabbit hole, but here's my concern is that stem cells are basically immature cells that are waiting for signals to grow and to grow up to be whatever we want them to be. In a healthy terrain, that makes sense. You know, it's like, okay, great, let's have you grow up to be a healthier cell. But in a sick terrain, like somebody dealing with cancer, that could theoretically create growth factors of growing more of the same damaged cell. So I'm a little bit hesitant to start to get excited about stem cells yet in the cancer world until we learn a little bit more about its safety and whether or not we're actually making things worse. But believe me, in the next couple of years, I think we will have more definitive answers to this question.
Mm-hmm. Lori wants to know, is there a basic test that somebody could take, blood or otherwise, just to let them know the amount of potential cancerous cells in their body during the time of the test?
Wow, that's a really great question.
That's a great question,
now,
yeah.
We did have a test that was available to us called the Enox 2 protein test. It was called Oncoblot, was the company. It cost about $900,
yeah.
And it was testing for this Enox 2 protein, which is basically only present if you have cancer. It was considered an early cancer detection test. Now, the FDA kind of shut them down, and they're kind of back to the drawing board to repurpose it. It wasn't shut down because it was dangerous or anything. It's just that they wanted them to go through a different methodology of validity, validation. Hopefully, it'll be available to us again in the future. But it was a very powerful test to see what was going on. Today, we have another test called IV Gene, which is also a protein test. Now, I am not certain if you have to have a pre-cancer diagnosis to have this test run, but you might look into it, IVYGENE, IVGene, I believe.com, because it's not necessarily, they don't consider themselves an early detection test, but they're also a particular protein that is only kind of showing up around a cancerous process. And it is, I think, runs around $400 out of pocket. So a little bit cheaper than the Oncoblot, but a little bit different. We're looking at something different. And then my clients, I have them just run a basic metabolic panel, which is your CMP, a basic CBC with differential. So I want to look at their neutrophil and lymphocyte percentage ratios and other things to look at their immune function. And then I have them run what my patients call the trifecta, which is C-reactive protein, sedimentation rate, ESR, and the LDH, lactase dehydrogenase. Those, if they are within my functional range, okay? So remember, labs are based on the average of the population, and hopefully listening to this interview, you realize we're not a healthy population, so you don't want to be average. You want to be better than average. I want to see those numbers, for instance, the high sensitivity CRP under 1, the SED rate under 10, and the LDH, depending on whether it was run through Quest or LabCorp, under 175 or under 450. If you're in the happy place in all of those numbers, even if you have cancer, you are still in the driver's seat. Okay, those are kind of showing whether the cancer has hijacked the system or not. If, however, all those numbers are elevated on the trifecta, then you want to find someone to help you dig deeper and see what is going on and where it's going on, because that can be an early indicator of a cancerous process for sure. So I use that test almost monthly in all my patients to monitor their response to any therapy and for sure long term to make sure they're staying in a good place.
Boy, with all those blood tests, you really get geeky, girl. I mean,
I am a total geek. Hey. Oh, I hope if nothing from today, everyone learns what kind of a geek I am.
Are you? Can you stay right there a second and we'll wrap?
Sure.
Yeah. Dr. Nasha Winters, sorry about the, I messed up on this Williams stick of hers. It's going to be cool. It's all about the financial system. And I just screwed up because I don't think that, well, it's a long story, but so we're going to reschedule them. Maybe we'll get them tomorrow or Thursday. Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. I just received my latest shipment of aloe from Stockton Aloe One. So I got four more half gallons to play with. Boy, I really love this this company and this product, and I've been drinking so much aloe, and I don't know why I just keep drinking it. I just feel good when I drink it. I don't have any, you know, there's nothing wrong, knock on wood, with me, but I do. I just drink a lot of it, and you can ask Dr. Google and look at some of the amazing things that aloe does, and this is a great product. It's just the pulp of the aloe, just the pulp, and then they flash freeze it in a, you have to get 2 1/2 gallons as the minimum, and it comes in frozen and all wrapped in styrofoam really nicely, and you're gonna love this product. You just defrost some of it and pour it into a glass jar, put it in the fridge, and then maybe drink up the 8 or 16 ounces in 2 or 3 days. Sometimes I'll just drink it all in one day. I don't know. I just love it. But it's aloe is just a magical species for so many different things. And especially if you have some rough patches in your gut, from your mouth all the way down to your bum, I don't think there's a better product on the planet that can help soothe things out. Certainly, if you think you have something like gastritis or something close to an ulcer, or irritable bowel, if you've been diagnosed with IBS and Crohn's and all those things, man, I would go right for the aloe. I just don't. I mean, even if your tummy is just totally perfect, I think you could take a little bit, 2 or 3 ounces of aloe every day for the rest of your life. Just my opinion, and you'd be better off for it. But I just love it. Anyway, so it's Stockton Aloe One. You can click an order right on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. OneRadioNetwork.com. Stockton Aloe One. In most cases, we kind of know that, God love them, most oils are just not very good to buy. It's the way they're processed, and they have these clear bottles, and they sit around in the light, and I don't really think there's anything that of substance to the idea that something is cold-pressed that came out, 20 years ago, cold-pressed, and we thought it was something. But if you want to get some different kinds of oils into your body, I recommend Andreas seed oils. These are like the bomb. These are like the mother load of oils. First off, they're all a Myron glass. Secondly, all organic, of course. Then he has this pressing process where these seeds do not even get into the oil, if you can imagine that. I don't know how he does it with these little small seeds like coriander or flax or sunflower or pumpkin seed oil or black cumin seed oil or hemp oil. That's what I'm talking about. Black sesame seed oil. Really beautiful medicinal oils. And you could just probably take a little teaspoon of every one of these every day and you'd be better off for it. And there's no oxidation, little or no, in none of these oils because of the pressing process. He was a gold medal gymnast out of Germany and really hurt his body a lot. He was going to die. He was in a hospital, and steroids and different pain medications and stuff that they gave him to help him win a gold medal, and really healed himself with these fresh, he did it with fresh pressed flax oil that his neighbor just pressed for him every day, and that's how he got turned on to this. These are really beautiful oils, and it's probably the only oil that we really recommend is Andreas seed oils. Of course, extra virgin olive oil in a dark color glass, and where you know the source, where it's not been mixed up, you know, that's a very, very nice choice, we think, for oil, and of course, coconut oil. And Andreas also has, I think, the most profound CBD oil, and we'll talk with our guest here about CBD and some of the other things going on with hemp. He has a straightaway hemp oil, which is just the hemp. He uses the whole plant, and then he has the Apex hemp CBD oil. You'll see it, and it's probably, wow, it is one of the most powerful ones, and I've tested a lot of them, and there's absolutely no THC effect from it because he doesn't use any heat, and I think that's where the THC turns into wacky tobacky. I mean, I've got stoned on taking high CBD oil, just taking a dropper full. I'm so sensitive. Well, you know, I still cry at movies. So what can I tell you? Anyway, yeah, so, and I don't like that. But there's nothing in this one because he doesn't use heat. These are Andreas seed oils. You can click an order right on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. And then we're also going to ask our guest about EMFs. Dare we even go there? But here's something about that. Previously, we were talking with Brandon about the Blue Shield EMF device. And he says it goes out 90 yards in all directions.
It's an omnidirectional field that, if you think about a huge sphere that's expanding, that's essentially what the waveform pattern looks like.
Oh, that's cool. So it's putting frequencies into the body, and then how does that work in relation to electromagnetic field that's coming in the walls and the windows through a cell phone tower down the street?
Yeah, so the cell repeaters and Wi-Fi and all this electromagnetic radiation in the environment, people mistakenly think that this is somehow going to act like a shield and block the radiation and make it not appear on any kind of tri-field meter or any measuring device. And that's simply not the case. It's more of an energy medicine, so to speak, where it's stimulating the bodies at the cellular level to create a cellular response to make all the individual cells much stronger and more able to adapt to the EMF stressors. So that's number one on the physical or the somatic level, where the body is experiencing a decrease in stress from electromagnetic fields.
If you're interested, you can click on the Blue Shield ad on the front page of One Radio Network. Use promo code One Radio, or also contact Brandon through his website there when you click, and he'll give you more information. Front page Blue Shield EMF protection device on OneRadioNetwork.com.
Know the source on One Radio Network.
We're talking with Dr. Nasha Williams. Boy, you're really fun to talk to. This is great. I've been having a good time.
Yay, I tell you, you are a blast. I had no idea we'd kind of take all these tangents.
We go all these different places where no man has gone before. How long have you been studying this stuff, Don?
Well, you know, I tell you, 27 years ago, October 21st of 2018, I was diagnosed with terminal cancer. I was diagnosed with stage 4 ovarian. They missed it for a good, I had a lot of health issues for pretty much popping out into this universe, and had a bunch of health issues from basically age 11 on. But by the time I was 19, I was in and out of a hospital for almost, or ERs for almost a year. And by the time they realized what was actually going on, I think they just thought I was a histrionic teenager. And so I was sort of treated, you know, I was quite dismissed, I guess is the only nice way to put it. And by the time they realized I was an end organ stage failure of extremely late stage cancer process. Wow. So that, of course, being told that you don't have any other options, because I was even too sick to take conventional therapies, they knew that if I'd even done a single round of chemo, it would likely into my life because my liver and kidneys had stopped working. That journey I'm still on 27 plus years later now, learning everything I could to keep my own butt alive. And way, way before people like you, being a wonderful resource for folks, and definitely well before Dr. Google. This is back in the 90s when Dewey Decimal System was the MO of how we learned of books around. And that's where I started stumbling upon the work of people like Dr. Otto Warburg. I went to a small liberal arts school that didn't have a very well-funded library, so we had a lot of outdated textbooks. And frankly, that was to my benefit, because I was reading on some of these ideas and thoughts around cancer that kind of got buried in the last, you know, 50, 70 years. And so I was stumbling upon that. It made sense to me that this is a metabolic disease down at the mitochondrial level, which meant that, hey, if my mitochondria got sick, those little store houses in my cells, then I can probably help make them well. And I've been learning and seeking how to make my mitochondria happy and healthy and vital and numerous for the past 27 years. And now the research of everything I do for myself, and have helped thousands of others do, is really being embraced in conventional research today. We're now going, hey, this is a good idea.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the direction. Wow. So I am an avid life learner. I'm married to a biochemist who has been on this path with me for all these years. And so we learn together, and we teach and educate worldwide.
Oh, that's great. Great, great stuff. So those of us who do not have any kind of cancer stuff, running around. All the things we're talking about is how we keep our little mitochondria happy. I mean, just the best food ever, and detoxification and exercise and peace, love, and hippie beats and the whole thing.
You got it. Yep. And that's just it, is that it really, you know, it's input, it's information, energy input into these cells. And so the mitochondria are very sensitive to being over treated with things like pharmaceuticals. So Tylenol kills off our mitochondria. Cipro kills off our mitochondria. Cipro, by the way, is also what is put in all the animal feed and CAFO farming organizations.
Oh, good.
So you're eating that every time you eat a steak from like Sam's Club, you're likely taking a nice bolus of Cipro, which kills your mitochondria. Antibiotics in general, chemo in general, also kill your mitochondria. Guess what? We're learning one of the biggest poisons of mitochondria is blue light. So I'm really glad that you talked about EMFs. We're going to kind of segue into that. But our love for technology, our love for screens and devices are slowly killing us as well. And then, of course, I talked earlier in the show about the amount of sugar we take in. Now, our mitochondria are meant to be dual engines. They're supposed to be hybrid engines. They're supposed to be burning fat and sugar equally efficiently. And we've just been stuck in a sugar burning or sugar fuel state for the past 150 years or so. So those are things that contribute. And that's what the whole book is about, is like, what can we do to upregulate our mitochondria? And there's like the 10 reasons why they get sick and the 10 ways of going about, you know, the 10 different recommendations of going out of that place. So, you know, it's a deep dive, and it does include things like EMFs. And boy, Hattie, I was happy to see in your lineup of your history of podcasts that you've even talked to some of the experts in 5G technology, which is getting ready to take over. And boy, Hattie, if we thought we were seeing a lot of cancer rates, autism rates, chronic illness rates, it's going to devastate our healthcare system, is what it's going to do.
Really? Did you see the article where they talk a lot. they're going to put up 20,000 satellites for 5G. Did you see that report?
I did. It's horrifying. It's horrifying.
Yeah.
You know, I jokingly for years said all my friends and family probably think that my husband Steve and I sit around with tinfoil hats on, and sometimes I wonder if we need to be doing more of that. You know, and you know, at home we turn off our Wi-Fi at night. We live in an old Victorian that's lath and plaster, so it's like living in our own Faraday cage. It's hard to get good signal in our house anyway. We try to hardwire everything we can. We avoid the Bluetooth stuff like the plague, and that's just in our own home. But you can't travel all over the world for work, and most of them are Wi-Fi, you know, tied in, and everyone else has their Wi-Fi. I mean, it's just, you can't get away from it today. So you have to do your best. Because I also live my life just like yours. It's virtual. Yeah. My work is virtual. So I, you know, I would sit all my stuff on my Defender shield, and I've got all my email. Like, I look kind of like the crazy person when I'm working, but my blue blocking lenses on my glasses and all the things I have to do to keep myself healthy, because I was feeling it for a while when I was thinking about all the food I was putting in and all the good stuff I was putting on my body or the supplements I was taking, but I was not thinking about the technologies and how they were impacting my health. And once I realized that was playing a role, I started mitigating it, and it's made a huge difference.
Do you think the blue light, because I have this little thing, contraption on my computer that turns off the blue light at night, but do you think it's good just to run that all day long? Because I don't, does the blue light affect us during the daylight hours too?
It does. Well, you know, and you're getting from natural light, you're getting the type of blue light you need during the day that stimulates the pineal and the pituitary, you know, network. Again, talk about endocrine disruption, endocrine hormone impact coming from light. I mean, we are light beings. You know, we come up and go down with the sun, or at least we should. Unfortunately, we know that a lot of health issues are related to poor sleep or even shift work. They have much higher incidence of diabetes and cancer and cardiovascular disease and obesity than anybody else, because they're simply out of sync. They're out of rhythm with the light. So we can definitely mimic and create, like my night shift workers who have to do that for whatever reason, they have special glasses they wear, and we take special care for them so they can continue to kind of biohack their way into being as healthy as they can amongst a lifestyle that's not healthy for them. And so we definitely want to be mitigating this even during the day, because the amount of blue light we're getting from our screens is I've seen studies saying anywhere from 10 to 1,000 times more intense than what we'd be getting from natural daylight.
Oh, good.
So you want to definitely block it during the day as well. And I have all those cool little shields on my phones and computer screens, but then I also kind of look like Bono all the time with my glasses on when I'm in front of screens as well.
Yeah. I've got a pair of those. What are they? I think they're orange. So I can watch a movie at night from TV, I put those little guys on, and I think it blocks the melatonin production too, doesn't it?
The blue light totally does. Yeah. And melatonin is one of our master antioxidants. And it's, you know, melatonin is our longevity hormone. And so we age faster when it's low. We don't sleep as well when it's low. We oxidize quicker when it's low. And whenever you're exposed to those blue lights, especially after sunset, you're basically turning that completely off and depleting it.
Mm-hmm. Let's take this call. Yeah. On the telephone, good morning. Who's this? Hello?
We scared him off with that.
That was pretty exciting. so let's talk a little about cannabis, CBD, and the rest. What's your experience with it? And do we have something here that's really going to help with cancer and other things, do you think?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I mean, I have the original Merck manual. Okay. So this came out in the early 1900s, and it's a tiny, compared to what the Merck manual is in medicine today, this thing is just like a handbook, you know, it's teeny. Uh-huh. But there are hundreds of references to cannabis as a pharmaceutical agent for all types of issues in health and well-being, from liniments and topicals to ingestion to inhalants to, you know, all the above. It wasn't until the 1940s that we kind of had a new Boston town sort of political movement that pushed this into the reefer madness arena, and we suppressed this ancient medicine that's been utilized for centuries and millennia all over the world and continues to be today. Not only is it incredible medicine, but it's a very diverse plant that offers things from clothing to soil remediation of fiber to nutrition, you know, from the oils and the seeds. And oh my goodness, there's so much goodness that comes from this. This was literally given to us on this planet. The other cool thing is we didn't even know until the 1980s that we all have what's known as an endogenous, so inside of us, endocannabinoid system, meaning that each and every animal on the planet, including humans and you know, our furry friends, and not so furry friends, all have this endocannabinoid system, which means we have receptors in our bodies that connect directly with these plant medicines. Okay. And so it's like, again, we've been negating something that's been part of us since the beginning of time. And so thanks to the work of Ethan Russo, who was the scientist and physician who found this in the 80s, been there all along, but he found it. That was kind of the beginning of starting to do research with this. And then the research started to move into the early years in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, thanks to the HIV and AIDS community and how much was happening with cancer in those communities. People like Dr. Donald Abrams out of UCSF area and Osher Center in San Francisco area started having some incredible outcomes with using cannabis medicine in that population. He's written textbooks, he's written loads of research, he's spearheaded lots of research. So we've known for decades that this was incredible in the cancer world. And then thanks to people like Dr. Dadi Meiri out of Israel, the largest amount of cancer and cannabis research is happening there right now and churning out understanding of how this may in fact be one of the tools that can really enhance our response to any cancer therapy, but also helps us understand that our years of eating low-fat diets, big, huge, huge mistake, big, huge experiment gone awry. You have to remember that our endocannabinoid system that depends on these natural cannabis pieces coming from, I mean, even peppermint has cannabis in it, like they're part of the same kind of families. But these substances are dependent on omega-3 fatty acids, and our diets in the last 50, 60 years are very, very high in omega-6 and very, very low in omega-3 now. We used to be at a 3-to-1 ratio of 6 to 3s. We now run around 26 to 31, depending on the research, to 3.
Wow.
Very, very inflammatory, and also very blocking of and degrading of our internal endocannabinoid system. And when someone has poor endocannabinoid tone or endocannabinoid deficiency, we have symptoms like IBS, migraines, depression, insomnia, fibromyalgia, Is this starting to sound familiar to you or any of your listeners?
Yeah.
We basically downregulated our endocannabinoid system since we went full on high stress, started changing our microbiome thanks to things like glyphosate, and started going low, low fat diets. We really wreaked havoc on how our system thrives. So these medicines kind of making a resurgence, they've been around altogether, but now we're starting to really understand their implications. And we're even getting to the point, Patrick, this is so cool, that we can test our own endocannabinoid system and know precisely what our tone is and what materials, what plant materials and balancing of those materials makes the most sense in us. There's a company called Endocanna Health, E-N-D-O-C-A-N-N-A, health.com. And you can send off a swab and they can check your epigenetics of how you respond to cannabis and then tell you precisely, like for instance, I'm someone who THC, which is the more psychoactive form, doesn't work well in. I need more of the pure CBD. Oh. And we find that most people actually need more of the pure CBD than the THC. And today, of course, since the 60s, we've started hybridizing the heck out of these plants and making them much, much more THC rich, when most of us are actually starving for more of the CBD aspect, as my husband says, the rope, not dope part of things.
The rope, not dope.
And
that's funny.
So it's pretty cool. And my husband's actually the kind of more of an expert in the field of the epigenetics of both the plant and the human, as well as cannabis research and also testing. He ran a cannabis and THC testing lab in the state of Colorado for a period of years and got really fascinated by terpenoids, which are the things we love about food, like the smell and taste of basil. Those are terpenoids. These are the parts of these plants that are our medicine, or the profiles of these like very aromatic components. So it's not so much about the THC or so much about sativa versus indica. It's about what our chemistry resonates with and what needs to help restore our balance.
Oh, so you can actually do tests with people and see if they need to do just more straightaway wacky tobacco or CBD.
You got it. You got it.
Huh, I'll be done. Yeah. But we do have these little receptors. So somewhere along the line, maybe we used some of these things, maybe thousands of years ago, and nobody knew it, right?
It would have just probably been just cooked up in our food. Like we would have been out harvesting wild greens. It would have been one of the wild greens that we harvested. Huh. Animals will gravitate to this in nature as well. And so, you know, again, different seasons, different areas, different strains, different where they're grown, different regions, they'll have different levels of THC or CBD or CBN or CBG or THCA, or there's all these components we're now learning of that are in this. And then the terpenoids themselves. So our bodies will need different things based on region and season and our own endocannabinoid blueprint. And we're getting to the point, just like I was saying earlier in testing for cancer treatment, we can even do the same thing with testing for cannabis treatment.
Mark has an email question for Dr. Winters. It is, I had a tissue test for toxic metals in my body. The results show that I had a high in aluminum. Does a doctor know sources of aluminum in the body? I don't use much aluminum cookware or foil, but since then, I've stopped using foil and disposable aluminum pans at all costs. It's crazy to think that the chemtrails could be contributing to aluminum levels in the body. Well, gosh, if you were using aluminum cookware, well...
Plenty.
There's your answer there, brother, right? Isn't that true? Yeah.
It is. It's totally true. And also, deodorant is one of the highest levels of aluminum any of us get access, exposure to. And again, we tend to deodorant up every day. So I would have your listener also check his deodorant and switch gears there, because it could be an ongoing pollutant there. A lot of body care products carry this, definitely deodorant, definitely, like you said, the cookware. Anytime we drink out of cans, you know, aluminum cans, things like that are definitely putting it into the system. And, you know, aluminum has been very highly correlated to neurological damage, neurological disease, Alzheimer's, dementia. So we definitely want to make his brain happy. You know, we want to get that stuff out of there.
Yeah, boy. Aluminum cookware. I thought we threw away all the aluminum cookware years ago, but I guess some folks are just not knowledgeable about that. It's pretty interesting. So on the electromagnetic fields, we do we really know what's going on? I mean, how this affects our body? And there must be a way that that we can get stronger and stronger and stronger, don't you think, to not have these affect ourselves so much?
Yeah, I do. And I think that's where I think even the clip you had on the last break from the young man sharing about, this isn't about blocking them. It's about kind of like transforming them.
Right, right.
You know, we are energy and we're being exposed to all these energies. So it's the idea again of, In our culture, our consciousness, we always are like, oh, the external, the invader, the evil. And yet we can't get away from it, right? So how do we then create synergy? How do we then sort of transmutate it in our favor? So I think that that's where a lot of the technologies and the research is going, because it's likely not going to leave our planet anytime soon. And I think it'll be covering it. It's the gift and curse. We love to be able to interact and have, you know, you and I talking like this while I'm in Mexico and you're in, you know, Texas right now. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty cool thing. But where I get excited about seeing some of the research is that we can transform energy. And in, you know, all the physics geeks out there will say, you know, energy can't be destroyed or created. It just is. So how do we just morph it into making it work for us rather than against us? And I think that we're in the early stages of this, and there are definitely people out in this world who are far, far, far more educated at being able to answer this question more definitively. But I'm intrigued by it because I think it's probably our modern smoke, you know, cigarette of the time, and something that we need to really start taking more action and more awareness around.
Lenny wants to know if you can go over some of the various nutrients like vitamin C and CBD, we've talked about that, that you use that you've seen been effective to help your patients get healthier.
Oh, I love that. So there are a handful of therapies that I have seen tried and true over and over kind of globally with all tissue types, with all stages of cancer that seem to have the biggest bang for their buck. And that includes the cannabis that we've just started talking about, seems to have a beautiful immunomodulating effect, really balances out the immune system, the endocrine system. Even if you're using the rope knot dope, the non-wacky stuff there, you can still calm down the nervous system. It down-regulates the sympathetic and gets you closer to parasympathetic, which is where healing happens.
I mean, the CBD does that.
Totally, okay. Exactly. Now, okay. You get components in both of them. There's a lot of cross-pollination, but I want people to always be aware that you can get just as much of a positive impact with CBD than using THC if people are scared of the high. Mm-hmm. So there's that. The other thing that's got a lot of great research around it, and I've seen it very clinically relevant, is a high-dose IV vitamin C. Yeah. And we're talking 25 grams or higher through an intravenous application. You need to work with a trained physician in this, and they need to be running a base test called G6PD, which is an enzyme to make sure that you can tolerate high doses of vitamin C. Because there's a small population that if you take in high-dose vitamin C, it will lyse your red blood cells. That's not good. So you need to screen and make sure that's not an issue for you. It's super rare, but you want to be careful, right? If you need a test before doing that. That therapy, again, people like the Riordan Center, R-I-O-R-D-A-N, and Dr. Hunting Hockey and his team and outside of Wichita, Kansas, they've been doing IVC research and work since the 1970s, and now KU Med and I believe University of Michigan have also been doing IV research on vitamin C with glioblastoma, ovarian cancer, pancreatic cancer, and many others, as well as infectious disease. There's a couple huge research projects all over the world on using it to treat even down to like meningitis. I mean, some really cool stuff. So look into that. We alluded to earlier low carbohydrate ketogenic diets that can be used and manipulated to help to act like a chemo, to act like a treatment. So for instance, going through radiation, high sugar, high insulin negates the response of cancer cells to radiation and increases side effects and rapid recurrence and mutation. So you really want to have a low glycemic status when you're going through radiation therapy to radiosensitize those cancer cells. So I love to have people on a ketogenic diet. during radiation therapy to have best outcomes, both to lower the side effects, but also to, if you're going to do the radiation, you want it to do its job, right? So you want it to work for you, not against you. So there's a load of work. In fact, I leave in a couple of days to go to a huge symposium, Metabolic Health Summit in Long Beach, California, at the end of the month, which is basically the Super Bowl of all people doing research in metabolic therapies for cancer. And the main approach is dietary, through getting people into metabolic flexibility with things like ketogenic diet, low carb, high fat, intermittent fasting, caloric restriction, and even exogenous ketone salt and ketone ester supplementation where appropriate. Not only is it lowering the glucose levels, but it's impacting all of the 10 hallmarks of cancer simultaneously. We don't have a drug on this planet that does that. So it's a very profound treatment to support whatever treatment you're doing. Hopefully the theme that you're seeing here is none of these therapies should ever be used alone. They should be used in tandem with other things. The other one would be hyperthermia, but also conversely hypothermia, so cryotherapy. So we have things like cryoablation or hyperablation. And what that means is that cancer cells, they don't have a way to adapt to their temperatures. Like our healthy cells do. So they get super stressed when they're exposed to extreme heat or extreme cold. And when they're stressed, they're more vulnerable to whatever treatment you're putting on board. Whether that's vitamin C, a ketogenic diet, hyperbaric oxygen, chemo, or radiation, that treatment is going to enhance the response and get a better outcome with less side effects and needing of less toxic medication or treatment to get the same outcome. So I love that therapy. And again, they're way ahead of us in Europe, probably 30, 40 years ahead of us in Europe, Japan, Southeast Asia in general, in the use of hyperthermia. In fact, most of my patients I refer out to Germany or Southeast Asia for these treatments because they're far more advanced than what we can offer in the US, and they'll do it in conjunction with things like radiation, chemotherapy, low dose chemotherapy, and immune therapies. So there's that. And then kind of the rounding out, the big one that you alluded to in the beginning is mistletoe. And mistletoe, Biscum album extract, is the most studied integrative therapy in oncology in the world today. Over 2,500 studies, one currently happening at Hopkins with several more in the mix to hopefully start up in the next year or two. And yet it's used again, it's been used continuously for 100 years. These therapies by and far take care of the majority of the body, not just treatment of the cancer. So I love that it works in tandem with many therapies, conventional or otherwise, to enhance outcomes while building up and restoring balance to the terrain.
Would mistletoe be a reasonable thing to take for healthy individuals?
You know, it's interesting. In Europe, they are doing some studies around using it like a vaccine. So, for instance, family members with Lynch syndrome or BRCA status, the BRCA1 or 2 status, or ATM mutations, some of these folks with high genetic propensities towards cancer and a strong family history, they're now having these folks do a series, meaning anywhere from, a few injections a year of this treatment to sort of mitigate or offset and help upregulate the immune system. So when we are talking about the immune system, we're talking about three components. So we've got the recognition portion, which is the body says, hey, that guy shouldn't be here. What's he up to? That's our recognition. The second part is the response. So, hey, you're not supposed to be here. We're going to gobble you up and get you out, or we're going to put you back into hibernation. And then three, remembering. So if it sees it again, it knows exactly what to do. Most of us today are walking around with at least one of those three broken. And once you end up with something like chronic fatigue or cancer or some type of autoimmune condition, likely at that time, all three are broken. And so what we're finding is with the treatments like mistletoe is you can sort of wake up and reestablish the three R's of your immune system. And it works specifically on certain cytokines and certain immunomodulating cells, such as your natural killer cells or T dendritic cells. So there's some pretty cool stuff that can happen with that. And I think we're in early discussions, but it intuitively makes sense. And I have a lot of patients that are intuitively just doing it for that purpose. Yeah.
Can you recommend an over-the-counter mistletoe that somebody, our listener, might want to just play with if they're
Yeah, it doesn't work that way, unfortunately. No. Because it's a lectin, it's easily degraded in our saliva and our GI tract, so it does not work orally. So it has to be prescribed by a physician. It is a subcutaneous injection, so a very superficial injection. We usually use insulin needles, so they're not painful. And you typically inject them 2 to 3 times a week around the abdomen or behind the arm or on the thigh, depending on the individual. And again, this is guided by typically an anthroposophically trained physician, or I trained over 250 doctors in this country on the application of this therapy. And we do have some trainings coming up for physicians this year. We have an international one that's being hosted out of India that I'm a co-facilitator on. And we have a face-to-face one coming up in June in Baltimore with some of the experts in the field of anthroposophical medicine and mistletoe application worldwide as the chief administrators and teachers, and I'll be one of those faculty members as well. So we're very excited that this is becoming more taught in the U.S. because it's used in about 80% of patients in Germany will use this therapy at some point in their cancer treatment. Yeah. About 70% across the whole country, all across the whole EU. And then the second highest rate of the use of mistletoe is actually in South America. It's part of even their children's cancer center in San Paulo. G is what it starts with. It'll hit me later, but Dr. Gelman, he is the head of this hospital in San Paulo and uses it as a treatment in their pediatric cancer patients pretty regularly. And then Southeast Asia is the next. U.S. is by far the furthest behind in the use of this. Canada, way ahead of us. They use it very regularly in conventional and non-conventional offices as well. So we're catching up. We're working on it this year.
After 20 years or so plus years of being such a geek, are there superfoods or nutrients or supplemental things that folks can buy just pretty easily on Amazon or websites like ours that you like to take? This would be our final question, then I'll let you go. That you kind of like to take as preventative or for more energy and whatnot?
Sure. Well, I'm a huge fan of magnesium. Because we're all deficient in that. It helps me sleep like a baby. It helps everything move through the tube nicely every day. Keeps my nervous system in check. Everyone has their own form. I like a citrate or a glycinate form for my own body. So I really like that. I like vitamin D, making sure my vitamin D levels are optimized. And I always take it with vitamin K and definitely take it with a fatty meal, because just having your vitamin D levels optimized above 50 on your labs, if you don't have cancer, higher than that if you do, will cut back the risk of cancer by about 70% per the vitamin D council portion of the NIH, and maybe even have that impact on a lot of chronic illnesses. So it's worth optimizing, testing and optimizing your vitamin D. And then I like to, the free thing that I like to do is work with just basic intermittent fasting. Yeah. Now it's not a product line, but if you simply do nothing for 13 hours, so let's say finish dinner at 6 p.m. and break your fast at 7 a.m., that's a 13-hour fast through the night. That alone shows an enhancement in prevention of recurrence of cancer, but also in prevention of chronic illness in general and increasing our longevity. If you want to push it a little bit, a couple times a week, maybe 16 to 18 hour fast, a couple times a week, you're kind of tuning up the whole system and helping the body take out the garbage through a process known as autophagy. So to me, less is more, I will take what I need as my chemistry asks for it.
Yeah, we've been hearing more and more about intermittent fasting. So there is a bonus if you want to get crazy and go 18 hours rather than 13. Does that include water or?
You definitely want to be drinking lots of water. Okay. And if you're very metabolically unstable, you get, say, a little shaky when you don't eat, then maybe just some simple bone broth. And I see you guys have some good bone broths on your site. You could do some simple bone broth with that. That'll keep you still in that state of autophagy, but help you not feel so, squeamish.
Autophagy, that's a new one. That's what exactly is that?
That is basically the little Pac-Man that come and clean up the debris when we give it a break. And so it actually won the Nobel Prize, I believe, in 2016 or 17 of real huge, mountains in medicine of being one of the best strategies we can do for health, which is basically if you give yourself a little break from eating, your body will come in and gobble up what doesn't belong and get it out. And that's the process of autophagy, AUTOPHAGY. Might be called autophagy in some places, or autophagy, tomato, tomato.
Well, man, you were really fun to talk to. I'm so glad. I don't even know how he found you. You know, sometimes, it's like you Google around before you know it, you have somebody on the air. It's like, well, how did this even happen? I don't know. But thanks so much for coming on the show. And your website is drnasha.com. So I guess you do, according to what we're hearing here, you do consults with people around the world.
Yes, and now I focus entirely on your doctors. I want your doctors to learn this, so I will consult on your behalf with your doctor so they can learn the way we think about how we test, assess, and address the body and help bring it back into balance. So that's where I'm putting my focus here on out. I'm no longer doing direct client consults because the bottleneck was our doctors, and we need to get more like-minded individuals out there helping you live your best self.
Cool. Well, it's been an honor to have you on. Thanks for being on, and we'll keep in touch and let us know if we can help with anything.
I can't wait. Thank you so much, everybody. May you all thrive.
Thank you very much. Dr. Nasha Winters, her website, drnashawinters.com. I totally screwed up on our second guest. I just figured out that I had not reconfirmed and reconfirmed like I was supposed to do, which is the reason he wasn't available. So it worked out great. This lady obviously was worth 2 hours. Could have done 3 or 4 hours with her. So you know how spirit is. It just kind of works, you know, just works. So we'll reschedule him, hopefully sometime this week, because I think you're going to like him. I had some really interesting things regarding the financial world and also a different astrological aspects and what's going on 80 years ago, 160 years ago, 270 years ago, or something like that. Really cool. So we'll get him on this week. And so we'll see you tomorrow. We're going to do a little detox show tomorrow and some other stuff. So let's have some fun. I appreciate your ongoing support. When you get some extra bucks you want to spend on your body and your body and your booty, you can do it with our rebounders and our saunas. You know, some really great plugs for a sauna. These are great. Save up your money. I think if you do a PayPal thing, you can also, you can, where you can finance it through PayPal on our through our site. So we'll see you tomorrow. I love you all very much, and may the blessings be.
Know the Source on One Radio Network.